Welcome to The After Party, a podcast about lessons learned and shaping the future. I'm Raven Bonnewell. And today, on this last episode of season one of The After Party, I am joined by Deborah Crabb, who is a Helen Hayes Award-winning actor in Washington, D.C., and Carrie McGee, who is the artistic director and the marketing director of We Happy Few Productions, which is a small classic theater company in Washington, D.C. as well. Welcome to The After Party, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. So first question that I want to ask is, what are you most excited about now that we are slowly inching into the after times? Carrie, you want to go first?
That's such a good question because I feel like I had a lot of answers a month ago, and now, right, there's all the Delta variants, and I'm like, are these things still possible? I have been very excited to get to spend time with my friends again. That's something that I did not do a lot during the pandemic. I was able to see my family a lot, which was really lovely, but not so much my friends. And now that feels a little bit more possible. Everyone is vaccinated, so we can kind of hang out together in small groups. And that is very, very rewarding.
Awesome. Yes, I'm very excited about that too. And, you know, for listeners out there, I've gotten to see Carrie a couple times now that we've both been vaccinated.
Yeah.
And it is, I don't know, it's such a weird, special thing to do. And yeah.
I feel like I just never want to leave your house. I come over and we hang out, and I feel like you have to physically throw me out because there's always one last thing I want to say, because I don't know if I'm going to see you in the future, you know?
I know. It's like, we have to make this last just in case we can't see each other for another year. Deborah, I have not gotten to see you yet. And I've been very jealous because, you know, I know that my husband has gotten to see you and Carrie's gotten to see you, and yes. I have not yet, but yeah. We will make that happen. But what are you most excited about now that hopefully things are winding down?
I think maybe the thing I'm most excited about is the possibility of actual physical theater coming back. But that, again, like Carrie said, that's very much still up in the air. Working around medicine and hearing some of these things before they fully touch down with others, and different variants, which are just accepting the challenge of going down the Greek alphabet line, is very mm-hmm. daunting, because one day it's this, then the other day it's another one, then the other day it's another one. And you're learning the Greek alphabet as you're going through all these variants and which one is vaccine resistant or not. So the main thing as an actor is just that question mark of everything. You know, I was in a show that was postponed until this year, and then we started rehearsals, and about 2 days in was when we kind of had to come to the realistic point of, there's a lot of us in this cast and it's an ensemble piece, and we can't really say we're going to pod. So we have to kind of make the educated decision at this moment when school is about to start and all of this stuff to put it on the shelf again. And I know I'm not the only one who's had shows postponed or outright closed just because it's too much of an up in the air situation. I've also auditioned for a bunch of theaters, and then it's been like radio silence or like, send your stuff. Also, FYI, right now we might just be accepting your stuff just to keep it on file because we are watching closely and we don't want to give you a contract and then we have to come back in like a week or so and be like, never mind, when you've already held those dates and things like that. So that's been the most difficult part of it. And I guess the thing I'm looking forward to the most, because theater is its own different animal. Like, you can go into work for a 9 to 5 and come back home, but with theater, it's not easy to do that. Then you have to spend a good chunk of your week with people who you don't necessarily stay around all the time. And so if there's an 8-person cast, it's 8 different areas of people you have to deal with of eight different patient zeros in the cast per se, where if someone gets back, you know, someone gets infected, then we have to quarantine. And then I have to tell my job people, hey, I've been exposed, you know, we have to quarantine. And so that's been the hardest part. And yeah. I guess the thing I'm looking forward to most is actors are very out in the open and doing a lot of stuff. And that's the scariest part.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just want to be able to act again.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you bring up such a good point around it's not actually like a regular old job where you know, just see these people in and out every day. You know, I think that something that isn't necessarily considered is that in the theater, usually everybody has multiple jobs, and you might be an actor that's solely an actor, but you're probably, you know, in a show and then rehearsing something else. You know, if you're a designer, you're designing probably a couple of shows. And that's if you're, you know, if you're riding that wave of just focusing on your craft. I know both of you have other jobs as well that are not involved in the theater. And so you're thinking about like who you interact with at your day job, and then who are you interacting with in the show. And it you know, with the state of theater and the arts right now in this country, you can't say, well, I'm just going to do this show and that's it. You know, you that doesn't work right now. And I think that, you know, what folks don't necessarily realize is that's not uncommon. I mean, all the way up to professional theaters, you know, I would go all the way up to even saying Broadway, right? Like even Broadway actors, which you think of that as kind of like quote unquote making it, I suppose, in layman's terms. But, you know, even they are doing various other things. And it's not just that they are showing up to do, you know, to be in The Lion King every night. There's a lot more that's happening. And so it just makes it very difficult to pod, as you're saying.
Yeah, that concept of podding amongst artistic professionals is such a great one. I know that they've been doing that a lot for all the television shows that are being produced, and it sounds dreamy, right? I think about that all the time. If someone could support me financially to pod, I'd do any show. I'd be very happy to. But that's not the life of a typical artist, right? That is an extraordinary life. That is a very lucky life to be able to have. And I think, yeah, when it comes down to us, you're always weighing that conversation, because theater, while it is a lot of our jobs, and we do think of it as a job, not as a hobby, it by no means is our only job. So we're making decisions based off of, you know, what interests us, what excites us, but also how much they're willing to pay, right? So you're weighing that risk versus money analysis on a daily basis sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the pandemic really forced the theater industry to take a look at itself. I mean, I feel very peripherally in it, you know, because I still am, but I'm also, you know, I was in a place that I was not counting on theater work for the last year because of becoming a mom. And, you know, I do have a full-time coaching business that I, you know, focus mainly on during the day. So I wasn't relying on it when all of this happened. But I do feel like I've been very peripherally connected to a lot of the conversations that have happened. And especially, you know, with still being very involved with We Happy Few as well, and looking at how we have had to pivot during the pandemic, I feel like, A, we've learned a lot. And it's actually opened some really creative doors. And I'd love to get your thoughts and what you see from a sort of lessons learned perspective. What was maybe the most surprising thing that came about during the pandemic that, you know, that you're glad of, I guess, or in, you know, here, you know, now we're in September, that seems like, hey, this has actually given us a nugget to go with even after the pandemic is over.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that first, if that's okay with you, Deborah.
Go ahead.
I think one of the things that was very surprising during the pandemic is how quickly we all had to shift, right? We Happy Few had a full season. Well, actually, we had the end of a season that got canceled and a full season that never came into fruition that we had planned out. And we pretty quickly made the choice to switch a couple of those shows to a different format. And we engaged like an audio play plus at home experience format. We were doing a series of detective plays where the audience got mailed out clues and world building events in addition to the audio play. And Raven, it blew up. It blew up in a way that no show we'd ever done before blew up. And it blew up because people needed something that wasn't on a screen, right? And people were desperate for experiences that they could share with their pod, with their families, et cetera. And we got a really nice write-up in the Washington Post, which apparently has amazing, amazing readership. No one is surprised.
Apparently,
this little known newspaper called the Washington Post did a write-up. But we expanded our audience over four times as much as what it was before, right? We actually had our most productive, successful season last year during the pandemic. And it's because we embraced a different format. And I think one of the lessons that we learned early on was how burned out on Zoom we were all getting, right? All of our jobs had switched over to it. We all had screen fatigue. And so we weren't super interested in virtual theater. And, you know, we still did a little bit of it, but we knew that that was a form that wasn't going to work for us if we wanted to do something. And we had the opportunity to lay low. You know, we didn't have any bills we had to pay at that time. But I think that idea of creating things was so important to us mm-hmm. that it was really nice to actually make the choice to say, no, let's do something this year. Let's still find a way to create. Let's still engage our minds. This is what we want to do. And let's use theater as a way to try to bring people together, even if we, the creators, can't actually be in the same space with them. And I like one of the great things about those audio plays too, is it allowed us to make theater with all of our friends, people that we'd work with forever, because we were like, you know, if we're going to do this, like, let's move forward with people that are in our sphere that we love working with. And that way it can be this like labor of love as well. I know the project I was most pumped about was of the mystery plays, Love Day Brooke, which Deborah actually plays the title character of, which was great because we haven't worked with Deborah in a theatrical setting for two or three years.
Yeah.
Is it? I think maybe more. Because, Dog in the Manger was 2017. Mm-hmm. So I guess about, three or so. Now it's four. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It was very exciting to listen to the audio dramas and, you know, kind of be transported to a different kind of entertainment and a different kind of joy and delight. And you can really hear and experience that at home, which is super neat. And, you know, I had no artistic part in the audio dramas whatsoever, because I was busy being like, oh, how do I be with a 3-month-old in my house? But it's super delightful. And, you know, the thing that I notice from it, you know, from conversations that we've been having, is that while the audio dramas may not live forever, you know, we're kind of in a place of, well, let's see what happens. But I think that the real nugget in that is that, you know, we pivoted and we're open to pivoting in the way that keeps the mission moving forward, and also is that like labor of love, like the passion has to go into it, and the camaraderie and the collaboration, and those are the things that are most important. And it's just like, you know, my experience of, you know, your leadership, Carrie, and the way that this company collaborates is really one of that of hey, we're gonna do what we do to make it happen. And it doesn't have to necessarily look the same way as it's always looked.
it's been pretty incredible to have the power to do that as like the artistic director of the company, right? To say, yes, let's do this different. We can still create and do something different, which is a very different place than a lot of artists are, right? Because artists are, jobs are put out into the world and they apply for them. So I imagine that Deborah probably has a very different perspective than I do on how the pandemic and art has worked.
I guess I learned two lessons. I was talking to one of my friends, Momo, about one of the lessons, because we were supposed to be in a show together. And I talked about the fact that, because I don't have a car, so I rely mostly on like DC area transportation of, you know, the metro or the bus or things have you. So, you know, working in this area, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not, depending on rehearsals and all of that. But I think pretty quickly, my mind started to let me know, we can't really do the full day of work and then rehearsal aspect of things. Because I also work with Carrie, and we were working sometimes 10 o'clock in the morning, and then we'd be done around 7 or about 6:30, and then book right to rehearsal at 7 o'clock. And it's like my body was not getting enough of the rest that it had gotten over the time. And then, you know, when it's done, having the long trek home and sometimes maybe not getting home until about 11:30 or so, only to turn around and somewhat maybe do it all over again at the same 10 o'clock. So my body was just like, I don't know if we can do this per se. You're going to have to like limit the hours at one place to be able to manage doing both. And that was just a lesson learned of like how much I was able to do before the pandemic, but how much I was also maybe possibly running on fumes more than I thought I was. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, when the show is kind of running, you're not doing as much work and there's less stuff that you're doing over the course of the time, but the rehearsal process is just in how lengthy the rehearsal process may be. I realized like, oh, this is what my body feels like when it's running on fumes and we just started. I don't know if I can sustain this for how long I was sustaining it before. Mm-hmm. And then I also picked up working out because I was like, well, you know, I was on a tour and there were gyms everywhere we went. So I was like, well, now there's no excuse. And so I had an app that would, you know, create my workouts for the day. And it was about 3 or 4 times a week. And then I got home and there was nothing. And I was like, well, I guess I'll buy resistance bands, dumbbells and stuff like that. And now like the workout has become a part of my week. So now looking at the rehearsal schedule and when I have to go to work and all of that, now it was just like, now I'm not working out for like a week. Okay. So now getting back in the hang of things, like realizing how much it affects just being able to really easily swing back in. So I was like, oh, I think I need to start reshuffling some priorities and, you know, when I rehearse and what I rehearse for and how long the process is. Because, you know, maybe as much as I want to do a show, I have to factor in a lot more than just, yeah, I can do it. You know, I'm not able to just do everything and think I'll be fine, because then Saturday you're crashing, but you can't really crash because you still have to do a Saturday rehearsal, come back home, somewhat crash, and then go back on Sunday to do it. So those kind of things were all in my mind. And then I guess, so that was the first thing of just the rehearsal times and all of that. I guess the second thing for me that I realized over the course of the pandemic, the lesson learned, was something that I'm actually happy about, was just how much I loved or enjoy recording in front of like my little makeshift studio screen and how much more efficient I've gotten. Where, you know, at the beginning, when you're doing things, you're taking like 25, 30 minutes, and then it becomes agonizing and you're frustrated and you're like, oh, I don't even want to do this audition anymore. But I gave myself, I was like, okay, well, I have to leave at 10 o'clock. So I have this thing I need to record. All right, we got 30 minutes to do this. And I was done in like 10. Or like about 15, I was like, one take. It is what it is. If I keep going and agonizing, it's going to get worse. I don't have time to do this, especially if it's like a singing one. You got to give yourself like 1 or 2 takes. If you hear it and it doesn't sound good, stop right there. Don't keep going through the whole thing. It's not going to get any better. Just stop the recording right there and start over. And so I have like a 1 second intro. Hi, my name is Deborah. And so I mess up like, stop. just start over right there. Like, don't try and make it work as you're going. But yeah, it's just made me be more efficient in recording and like having the intention, like prepping before, mm-hmm. you know, you get a script, like underline it, like write all your action terms and everything. And then when you're in front of that camera, you're done in like 10, 15 minutes and then you watch it. And I know Carrie will be happy to hear this because I told her I don't like listening to myself. I still have not listened to the audio play because I cannot stand the sound of my own voice.
That's ridiculous.
Deborah. Yes, it is a work in progress, but it is a hard work in progress as this actor. But I've actually found myself like watching the playback of the things I've recorded and like smiling and being like, oh, I sound good here. And so that has been like a great form of improvement for me. So who knows, maybe the next week I'll text Carrie and be like, I don't sound bad.
Deborah, oh my God. Okay. I love this. And what I keep hearing and what you're talking about is I'm like, oh, they fit together, is that you're actually taking better care of yourself all over the board.
Correct.
And not like kicking yourself in the butt for that mistake or this mistake, or let's get it, you know, let's try to make it better in the next 20 seconds here.
Yes.
You know, like the cool thing about this is really like you're meeting yourself where you are, wherever that is, you know, and if that's a, hey man, I'm not going to, you know, rehearsal for 5 hours at 6 PM and that just doesn't work for me anymore. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or looking at, you know, I need to get a workout in, or I'm only going to do this, you know, take, I'm going to do 2 takes. And if I'm not doing it, I'm not doing it, you know, or let's submit what we've got and you can agonize over it on the other side of the screen or the, you know, or the headphones or whatever, but like, get it off of my plate. And I acknowledge you so much for that, because that is like, that's a huge breakthrough to come out of this whole thing with.
Well, there's such a job scarcity model in theater, right? Mm-hmm. Every job is always temporary and you're always hoping that someone likes you enough to cast you again. So there is this model of like, if something comes along, you have to take it because you don't know when the next one's coming. And if you don't do something for a while, is everyone going to forget you? And those sound so insane, but those are real fears and actions in this job that we have. So to be able to say like, I don't want to do this because I want to have weekends. I don't want to do this because I'm not passionate about it. Like, that's a huge thing. And that I don't think that's something that a lot of artists are able to say, because it's just not in the way of thinking, right? Like the way that the whole industry is set up is very counterintuitive to that.
Yeah, yeah. Touching on the thing about the worrying about where you're going to get the next job, I definitely found myself worrying about that when, you know, like last year there wasn't much. So we were all easy breezy, relaxed. And it's like, you know, if a show comes, that's great. Hey, I got a show in the pandemic. But, you know, like as things started opening back up and there was hope that the theater season would start, I found myself feeling that discomfort of that fire and the disease of, oh no, here comes auditions. I'm seeing some of these seasons and I don't know if I fit in, or like I'll send stuff in. I hope they call me in and all of that. And starting to feel that nervousness all over again of like, will I get cast? Will they remember me? It's been a while. Does everyone know me? Do they want me? And I had a moment of saying, if it happens, it happens. I'm not going to fall into the same, you know, routine of freaking out come February to April, where a lot of people are casting and then I don't get called, or I do get called or whatever. So I've kind of been out of that mindset. So every time I've gotten an email or something that's like, hey, you know, thanks for your video, you know, would you like to submit? It's been like a happy surprise, because I've removed myself mentally from being so hung up on things. Like, sure, there's that anxiety sometimes of, well, I sent it and I got nothing. It'd be nice to even get a no. That will never go away per se, but just the starting end of it, of just being like, if it happens, it happens. I'm going to send it. That's fine. Let it be.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, it's so brilliant and loving to put yourself first like that, of, you know, whatever will be what it will be. And, you know, there's no sense in like worrying about it on that level, and really trusting your value that, you know, people see it too. And, you know, there are, I'm sure, many theaters that are like just itching to have you back. And, you know, but it is, I get that the rat race, you know, that goes on mentally of, oh, what if I don't, or, you know, what if I, you know, just take a vacation for, you know, a little bit while, once we're able to do so again, and will that put me out of the running, and all of these stories that perpetuate the same that we've always been doing. And, you know, one of the things that I've seen is, you know, the theater scene in both DC and nationally, I think too, have been having a lot of really important conversations during the pandemic, right? You know, the conversations about DEIB, right? Really looking at equity, inclusivity, diversity, belonging, looking at ridiculous practices that we just feel are, oh, it's the way that it goes, right? We've got a lot of these, you know, the show must go on, and, you know, it'll all come together, or you got to pay your dues, or bullshit like that, right? That we've started to look at and really challenge. And what I noticed is that as soon as a bunch of theaters said, oh yeah, we're coming back in the fall, it's like it all went out the window, and everybody was scrambling to get to the audition, get the part, like whatever it takes. And it's like, you know, we actually have to stay looking at it with our eyes open, and that headset, that mindset that you bring, Deborah, of putting ourselves as valuable, and that we are not a commodity, and that actually it's really important that we put ourselves first and take care of ourselves and each other. Like, that's actually how any of this is going to change.
I've been actually a little disappointed coming out of the quarantine at how quickly a lot of the world is just restarting as if nothing happened, and in multitudes of different ways. But I don't know, I guess I'd imagined this beautiful reckoning where everyone had, you know, a year and a half to like live with themselves and kind of find themselves and their values, and this idea of coming out of the world and like really taking stock of what was important. And I feel like what I'm seeing more and more is everyone is just going faster because they feel like they've got a year and a half to make up for. And there's this frantic, harried pace that's happening. And I think a lot about, oh, I thought it was actually going to be a lot easier for us to exist in this newer, calmer world, but I actually have to make a very conscious choice daily, in fact, to slow myself down and not get wrapped up in that, because it is barreling all around me, and it is overwhelming. And mm-hmm. And it's not just overwhelming because I'm not used to it anymore. I think there is a little bit of that, but it is this recognizing of like, no, I thought we all learned that this wasn't a healthy way to live. Why are we all so anxious to get back to it?
Yeah.
And I think that the question that you just asked, Carrie, is, I think the answer is also in the question that you asked, because we lost time. And so when you're trying to make up for time, the things that you wanted to do better go out the window, all for the sole purpose of making up time. And that's what's also been disappointing for me. And, you know, I love sports. If you are a friend of mine, as both of you are, you've heard me talk about sports before, whether it's nationals or whether it's, you know, some form of basketball or tennis. I have found myself during this pandemic glued onto my tennis channel, watching tennis from all over the world at all different times of the day and being fully engrossed. And it's just been baffling to see, like, as the year has gone on, like Australia didn't have audiences or people in the stands. And then we got to, you know, France, and it was like, okay, I'm going to go with this. And then we got to like Wimbledon when it was just like, doesn't matter. And it was like the audiences were packed. And I was like, there's still a pandemic going on. And now like US Open is happening. And last week there wasn't even going to be any type of vaccination proof or masks happening. And then they quickly reversed that and were like, no, you have to show your proof of vaccination. And I'm like, that's still not enough. These people need to be in masks and stuff like that. You know, it's just how quickly we have thrown things out of the window. And I think that's been the biggest disappointment for me too, is just that, you know, some people had healthy rehearsal practices or healthy ways to, you know, help their actors and get through things and all of that. And it seems like even someone asking about COVID protocols seems tedious for a theater to answer at times. Like, there's still a pandemic going on. I would love to do your show. I would like to know what the measures are. Who is going to be called in? Do we have to all be called in right now? That's not necessary if I'm not going to be in a show or if I'm not going to be in these scenes. Can I not be called for that day? You know, those things that we were hoping would happen, but it's kind of like gone out the window because you're getting paid. So come sit down for 2 hours and then maybe the director will figure out like, oh, we don't need you for today. Go home. You know, yeah. So...
And Deborah, also, my biggest question is, do you still have hand sanitizer? Have you noticed that everyone is out of stock of hand sanitizer everywhere you go now? And it's like, what?
Yes, it's like we're out of stock in the theaters and places, but the shops are overflowing with them and saying, please take these. Everything is on sale, but it's like nobody wants to touch it. And it's like we still need to be wiping stuff down. We still need to have these measures in. It's not gone away. It's the summer and the cases are rising, whereas it should be the opposite since everything is hot. But, you know, so hopefully things change for the better. Maybe when it gets cold again, it'll have all the thoughts come back to everybody. And maybe because we'll all not be wanting to be outside so much because it's cold, everyone may have that aha moment again to do the right thing. So, you know, fingers crossed.
I think so much about the ingenuity that some people displayed during the quarantine, right? This idea of like, I'm going to make stuff happen. There were so many beautiful things that went to Zoom that, I mean, I taught theater classes over Zoom. I had no idea that was even possible. And actually it was very successful, like so many different ways of people making it happen, that it was incredible, that I really want that to still be a thing. Like, I felt like I stretched myself so much with the audio plays. Like, I learned a whole bunch of new lessons and new skills that I'm so excited to put into everything, that I think it's going to be a real bummer if things go back to exactly how they were. I think we all changed a lot and our practices for doing things changed, and trying to go back to the way it was is going to be like putting a round peg in a square hole. Like, it just doesn't fit anymore.
Yeah. Well, and consider, you know, just something to leave everyone with, you know, clearly we want to be able to go back to the way things were. And it's such an odd time to be recording this because, you know, we thought, you know, when I started this, it was like, everything's opening back up. And now it's like, everything's shutting back down. Right? but consider that one of the catalysts for creativity is somewhat of like a box to put it in, right? When we can do whatever with whatever and have a million bajillion dollars or whatever, right? That's actually very hard to create in. And then it just becomes the same old, same old, same old all the time, right? Like, how much money can I throw up on stage? How, you know, all of the stuff. But when we actually have constraints, appropriate constraints, you know, we actually can, you know, have creativity flourish. So, you know, I'm also hoping that within this, you know, hopefully hiccup that we're having right now, that, you know, we can go back to looking at, okay, hang on, this is not over. I do not have full reign to do the same things as we did before. Rather than, you know, Deborah, you brought up, we lost time. And, you know, considering that you still spent it, right? Everybody still spent the time, and we actually learned something from it, or we could you know, kind of approach it from that, like, all right, why are we having this hiccup right now? What can I use it for, rather than let's just get past it? And I think that that's, you know, that's a big thing of why folks are, you know, crashing into, you know, a future that doesn't yet exist. Because, you know, we're not looking at what we've, but at the present of, you know, what we're actually learning. We're trying to skip three steps ahead. So, well, thank you both for being here on, again, the last episode of season one of the After Party.
Woohoo!
Yeah, we did it. My intention is to bring this back later on in the fall, with sort of a different spin and not exactly looking at after COVID, though who knows, maybe that'll still be the hot topic of conversation. but I want to thank you both for being here, and both being artists in the world. I thoroughly believe that the world needs more creative and heart-centered individuals like the both of you. So thanks for sharing your time and your talent, and for being here with this in this conversation with me today.
Thank you. So in this whole vein of the conversation that we've had, the last words I would say is your time and your body are valuable. So take a moment to consider if it is worth it to put your body and your time through whatever you are about to do.
Thanks, Deborah.
And I think too about if you're interested in living a creative life and the platform in which you live that life has been taken away, I think it's really valuable to ask yourself, am I doing this for that platform, or am I doing it for the creativity? And like, if that means that you need to pivot and find a different avenue for it, like that exists, and that's actually incredibly empowering.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Carrie. Thank you, Deborah. You have both been wonderful guests and are just delightful human beings. I'm so thankful to have you both in my life.
Thank you, Raven.
Thank you, Raven.
I'd love to hear what you've learned about yourself through the COVID pandemic. You can get in touch through email at ravenbcoaching@gmail.com. I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook at Raven Bonnewell Coaching, and on Instagram at Raven B Coaching, RavenBCoaching. If you've enjoyed this episode, do us a favor and give it a 5-star rating to help us reach more listeners. The After Party is a celebration of lessons learned. It's hosted by leadership coach Raven Bonnewell and produced by Accomplishment Media.